And I should say, age plays a really big role. So as much as you might, those who are listening might hear me often say, because I do, age doesn't matter, because to me it doesn't. It matters in one area. It matters when we have to make decisions, and time is impacting that. That's where age matters.
Welcome to the podcast. This is Tracy Donegan. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Mark Sklar. Mark is known in the fertility world as the fertility expert. He specializes in acupuncture and a holistic approach to reproductive wellness. So if you're just trying to start a family or maybe you've been trying for a while, Mark has some great tips for you. And now I bring you Dr. Mark Sklar.
Welcome to the show, Mark. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to spend some time with me this evening to talk about fertility. You're known as the fertility expert, the guru in the US when it comes to fertility. And we've been following your program, your HOPE program, and everything you've been doing, and all of the amazing information that you so generously share on your YouTube channel. So I'd like to start, go back to the origin story. Where did this all begin? And I did say something in your website about being a health detective starting at a young age. So what does that mean to be a health detective?
Yeah, for me, it's always been something about just trying to figure things out. I should say initially it was me being a detective for myself. I was going through my own health issues and, not much was working very well or consistently enough. And so for me, it was very much about what's going on in my world and what can I change for myself to improve my health and my digestive function. That's how I ended up kind of going down this path of trying to investigate and learn a little bit more about alternative forms of medicine, different types of healthcare, how we can bridge those gaps, how we can integrate them and bring them all together. And so I have to say initially, I didn't do a very good job of figuring out my health issues until much later in life. And once I got into graduate school and learning more about healthcare and medicine is really when I started to dive deeper and investigate more about myself and figure those things out. And it was very much a process of peeling the onion for myself. But that's really what I do with the couples that I support as well. It's very much about diving deeper and trying to understand more and peeling the onion to learn more. But, sometimes more isn't always better. I think sometimes it's about also allowing us to have a good understanding for where we're at and what's helping us and what's not, as opposed to adding more onto our plate and always wanting to do more and more and more, which is, I think a chronic problem that we all have. And so sometimes it is not about diving deeper or finding more. It's about, well, we have an answer, we have an understanding, and now it's about doing that and giving that time and being patient with it and giving ourselves space with that to be better at it or to give our bodies more time to heal. And so, it's twofold in how we approach healthcare, I think.
And I agree when we talk about, that deep dive, and sometimes I think, especially at the moment or the last couple of years, the focus on data gathering, as in, the smartwatch and the smart ring. And really, I think we've become obsessed with data, but it's at a superficial level, I think, for part of it, because if we're not willing to, take the next step deeper diving, then we've just got all of this, data that's out there we're not really applying to our lives or to our health and wellness.
Yeah, I very much agree with that sentiment. I often joke that the first time that I wore a smartwatch to help me sleep better, I slept much worse. I was very anxious about just trying to gather information. Oh, what's it going to tell me in the morning? And oh, it's tracking my sleep, so I've got to make sure I go to sleep on time, or that I or that yeah. I sleep well, but I'm not sleeping. I'm tossing and turning. That means it's going to affect my sleep. It was this whole, you know, yeah. conundrum in my mind that was going on. And even though I actually have a smartwatch now, I take it off to sleep. I know okay. if I'm sleeping well or not. Yeah. And I'm a good judge for it. I'm my own, you know, sleep monitor, if you will. Yeah. So yeah, all these extra things, they're helpful if we use them right. They're not helpful if they cause more stress. And it's very much the same way I talk to the couples I support with all the new fertility monitors and trackers and apps and so forth. Mm-hmm. They're all great. They all do different things and they all can be helpful. But the first thing that I always say to everybody is, one, do you need it? Right? Like, if you already know yeah. that you have a regular cycle and where you ovulate, do you really need that app or that ovulation tracker to give you the yeah. same information that you already know? And two, by tracking all of this stuff, is it going to make you more anxious and stressed? Because if it is, then that defeats the purpose. And I don't want either one of those things to happen. So I think there's ways that we can utilize those things and not have to use them all the time. Like we can use it for a cycle to gather some information and then stop. We allow yeah. life to take hold and then we can reintegrate it to see, oh, did we see change? Did we see progress? And I think that's can be a healthier way of utilizing it.
Yeah, and just on the sleep as well, when I've talked to other women as well about that, you know, because sleep is so important, as you know, it affects every system in the body. But what was happening yeah. was they were waking up in the morning and looking at their watch, and it set their mood for the day. So it said, oh, you had a brutal night's sleep last night. I was like, oh, okay. So we're starting off literally on the wrong side of the bed for them, it becomes a prophecy that it's yeah we're definitely going to have a bad day because we've already shown ourselves we didn't sleep well last night. Right. so you work with couples from all over the world, so you're connecting with, you know, with couples from different cultures, and so are you seeing different trends based on where your clients are? Are there different trends in fertility challenges in certain parts of the world that are more common, or what are you seeing kind of globally?
I wouldn't say that I see different fertility challenges in certain parts of the world over others. I would say that the ability to get the care that you need or to be supported properly, to not be ignored, that's probably the biggest thing that I see change from one part of the world to another, and from culture to culture. I don't really, you know, not entirely true. I will say that I can see certain conditions a little bit more in women of color. They do tend to have more fibroids and more cysts. But I wouldn't say that's specific to a part of the world, right? But I will say that the things I do notice more is, oh, they're in this country. Oh, they shouldn't have a problem getting the care they need. Let's just say they're in Greece. They'll be just fine getting the care that they need. Oh, they're in the UK. Okay, getting the labs they need is going to be more difficult. Getting their doctors to listen to them is going to be more difficult. They're going to have to be much more advocates for themselves, or they're going to have to take some of these things into their own hands. Those are some of the things that I definitely see different from one part of the world to another. You know, in the Middle East, I will say I see a lot where they can pretty much get whatever labs they want. It's very easy to get some of those things done at very inexpensive costs, which is really helpful for them. But on the flip side, they have a harder time getting some of the supplements and the nutrients that they need. And so those sorts of things do change and cause me to have to adjust to them a little bit and understand, okay, well, I can't do these things, so how are we going to do that for this individual? And that's really something that I noticed. One of the bigger struggles we have is we have a lot of women who reach out to us from Africa, from all parts of Africa. and I'd love to be able to support them. The challenge we have, and they get frustrated by this as well, is that we can't get them the nutrients that they need. It's really challenging to get them the supplements or the medication or whatever it is that they need over there. And so it's become a struggle for us. And so we can't help them as much as we would like. And so those are more of the things that we notice throughout the world.
So when you're just coming back to supplements and nutrition, what are you seeing in kind of, you know, the kind of the standard woman of today? What are we deficient in? What are you seeing in, like, nutritionally that you think, yeah, look, everyone could do with having every woman who's of childbearing age, now I'm gone past that, but is actively trying. What are they missing nutritionally? What are you seeing on their profiles?
Yeah, we see a lot. I think overall we can say that the food's just not giving us what we need, just in general. I do get a lot of individuals who will say, a little less now than in the past, but they'll say, well, why do I need this if, you know, shouldn't we get everything we need, all of our nutrients and vitamins and so forth from the food we eat? Well, theoretically, yes. One, if we're eating well and we're eating balanced, which most of us are not. And then two, our food doesn't have the same nutrients as it once did, which is why quality of food is so important.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this conversation and are interested in a holistic approach to fertility, the best way to support our work is to subscribe and share this content with other amazing women and men in your life. Your support is so important to us and helps us reach more women with empowering content. So go ahead, hit that subscribe button and spread the love.
So actually, the biggest deficiency that I see is vitamin D across the world. Everywhere, whether you live in warm climates or cool climates, vitamin D. We're all indoors too much. We're all covered, or we have sunscreen or whatnot. So vitamin D is a huge one, which impacts all sorts of health related issues and really impacts fertility. That's a big one. You know, in recent years, I've seen a lot more iron deficiency. Mm-hmm. You know, it's hard to say why, because previously I hadn't seen as much of it, but we are now. Those would probably be the two biggest things that we see. If we do a micronutrient panel where we're looking very deep at all the different nutrients that we might need, not specifically to fertility, but in general, then that can be where we see a lot of things come up, but it's going to be very different from one person to another for lots of reasons. You know, their diet's one of them, where they live is another. And then last is just genetic makeup. Some of us metabolize things better than others. And so, you know, that really just causes all of us to be unique. And one of the things I speak to quite often is just how individual and unique we all are. And so we don't tend to see those same things across the board for each one of us.
And what are you seeing for men as well? I assume vitamin D would be the same, because they don't get it in the sunshine either. So are you seeing, again, similar issues as well with?
Yeah. One thing that's really interesting for me with men is not specifically, certain vitamins or nutrients, but more hormone related, is that it's amazing to me how low we find testosterone levels to be in the majority of men that we work with. Yeah. And if you ask them, how do you feel? Do you have enough energy in the morning? Do you sleep well? Do you have enough vitality? Do you get an erection? Do you have a good libido? All these things. Often they'll say yes. Now, I don't know what everything's fine. Now, I don't know what they're comparing it to, right? But it surprises me that they would say those things are fine, yet when you look at their testosterone levels, they're relatively low for a healthy male. And so that to me is surprising to see. I always wonder, I'm like, well, what would you feel like when your testosterone levels are going to be much higher? You know, if everything's fine now, you must be great later when we correct this issue. But I have seen that quite a bit, is low testosterone levels.
And then how is that? Do you work with, I guess, supplements for testosterone injections or, and then a little off topic, but for women who, do you check women's testosterone as well? Because it's something that I'm Absolutely. Seeing further in the menopause space, but women's testosterone, it feels like nobody is even looking at it when it comes to fertility. It's like, yeah, it's kind of a big part of it as well.
It's a big part in women as well. We absolutely check it routinely. Low testosterone levels, low androgen levels can absolutely impact fertility and egg quality. And so it's something that needs to be supported in both women and men. Interestingly enough, and I think this is an important point to mention it, especially as we're talking about men and testosterone, you mentioned it, that, you know, the casual person listening who would say, okay, well, I've got low testosterone, I should just go start taking testosterone injections or whatnot, in whatever form, to help my testosterone levels and theoretically help my fertility. It will help your testosterone levels. It will destroy your sperm. So for everybody listening, testosterone is not the solution to low testosterone levels when you are trying to get pregnant and have children and a family, because it will destroy your sperm quality. And I've seen that routinely across the board with men, and I have many of men who have come to me. I'm like, you've got no sperm. What's going on? And they don't know why. And then we start talking. We realize, oh, well, I was told that I had low testosterone levels, so they put me on testosterone. I was like, did you ever tell them that you're trying to get pregnant? Most often they say yes, and the person just, you know, wasn't aware of the situation. But sometimes they don't even express that they were trying to have children. And as a result, you know, that was a problem. So there's lots of different ways to support testosterone levels, both through medication and through natural supplements, but we definitely do not want to be taking testosterone directly.
And for anyone who's listening and maybe panicking right now because they didn't know this information, is there a fix for fertility if you've been on testosterone?
Yeah, the first fix is get off of it ASAP. It. Yeah, and then give yourself some time. It can take, you know, usually minimum 6 months, can take longer to recover. I've seen it take less time when we've been able to do a more comprehensive and integrative approach. Sure. I remember a gentleman who was in Florida who was in this situation, and we were able to get things recovered, I think, within 3 months, and they were pregnant shortly thereafter as a result of that. But he had no clue. So yeah, there are things that can happen and things you can do, but first step is to get off of it. Yeah,
because I'm thinking, because these days with medications even seem to be easily available, you know, so I'm thinking about, you know, the guys at the gym who have been told testosterone is going to help you bulk up and really might not have thought this through or haven't got the information. Right. But yeah
I've seen, that, by the way, I've seen
if
marriages,
I was that partner, I wouldn't be very happy if I was that partner.
100%. Yeah. I've seen marriages destroyed as a result because she came to find out that he's been on testosterone for all this time and that it destroyed his sperm. They want to have children and he doesn't want to get off the testosterone because it's such a big part of who he is at this point. And, you know, they can't move forward. So,
yeah. I mean, fertility treatment itself are difficult enough. And even before you get to that point, it's difficult. But having that diagnosis then on top of things would be adding insult to injury, really. So the World Health Organization is now saying, you know, 1 in 6 are going to experience fertility. So what's going on in the world that human beings are having such a hard time procreating?
Yeah. So that number has come down, you know, has dropped or gotten smaller, unfortunately. And I think it used to be 1 in 8. Now it's 1 in 6. And that's a shame. You know, one piece of it is I think we are much more aware and discussing it more. So we're seeing our numbers change as a result of people are more willing to have that conversation. Yes, I've struggled or I'm struggling. And so the numbers are more appropriate. They could have very well been this way before. But I speculate they have not. I speculate in the last 50 to 60 years, we've seen a huge shift in fertility rates. And one of the biggest reasons that I attribute to it is chemical exposure. It's just the world that we live in today. And we have seen a huge rise in the use of all sorts of chemicals. And when you look at the graphs and you see the rise in these chemicals and the exposure we've had over the last 50 to 60 years, what you also see is, inversely, is the drop in sperm quality and sperm count in men specifically. Yeah. So that those two things we've seen, they go hand in hand. And that's a huge, huge reason why we're seeing all these fertility issues today. I know that most of the focus tends to be on the woman and on egg quality and so forth. 50% of all fertility issues are male factor related. And sperm are really sensitive and volatile. Very easily changed and influenced, both good and bad. But in this case, we're talking about bad. And so all the exposure to all these chemicals really starts to have an impact on fertility. And one of the things that I'm noticing, because one of the labs that we're running somewhat routinely for everybody in my coaching program is environmental toxin exposure. And when I look, you know, everybody has something. First and foremost, very few and far between do we see very little come up. So I've seen a handful of times, literally when I say a handful, you know, about three times in all the labs that I've run, that someone has only had one chemical or toxin at high levels or two. Usually it's much more than that. And typically when we just see those, it's either BPA or glyphosate, which is Roundup. Those are the two things that we see routinely for everybody. And then again, you know, then there's other things around that, but those are the two most common things. And you would be surprised. I was actually initially, I was really shocked that BPA kept coming up. The glyphosate was no surprise to me, but it's everywhere in all of our food. It's all around. Everyone's using it, unfortunately. But the BPA was really surprised because of how much effort has been put into BPA free and getting rid of BPA and so forth, which is, you know, kind of a bigger conversation. But so I was really surprised initially to not see all that come up. And now I just really, it's almost on every report. So we're still getting it in all sorts of places. And these are the places where people just don't think about. They get rid of their plastic water bottles for stainless steel, but you can't avoid BPA in like the lining of a can of food. It, you know, unless they took it out, you can't avoid it. And BPA is on every receipt, paper receipt that you get. Everyone is full, is just the whole thing is BPA. So as soon as you touch it, you get it. So it's just really hard to get rid of all those things.
Yeah. So if you come across, you know, somebody that is showing high levels of these toxins, how do we minimize? I mean, we can throw out all the stuff, but is there a way to minimize?
We do the best we can. We do the best we can. So my encouragement to everybody is to take baby steps to really minimize our exposure. What can we do? So with that receipt paper, like if you don't really need it, don't take it.
Yeah.
If you could get an email or a text message receipt, opt for that instead. There's really no reason. It's also easier to manage. There's no reason to have that paper. And it's just minimizing things. Okay, well, if I know that it's in the canned food that I get, like, can I get that same thing in a different way or can I purchase it differently? And it's just trying to do the best we can to minimize exposure over time. I ran my levels for the same test because that was what I was seeing for everybody. And I'm super conscious and aware of everything that I come in contact with that I have in my household. And, you know, my levels of BPA and glyphosate and other chemicals were high. So, you know, it's caused me to take a second look at, okay, so what can I do within my control? Like, I obviously can't change my neighbor's habits. I can speak to them, but like, can you stop spraying Roundup? Yes. One person says yes. The other one says no. Okay. You know, I made a little bit of a change, but there's only so much you can do. So we do the best we can. And then the next important thing is to really manage what can we do for ourselves to help you know, reduce that toxic burden in our bodies? How can we manage that, you know, for ourselves physically? Can we do a detox ongoingly? What can we do to help sort of help our bodies manage those levels and excrete those chemical toxins as efficiently as possible? And that's probably the most effective, right? Is you could do what you can with your environment. Yeah. And you could always maybe do a little bit better. And so you just try, but it can't be stressful. It's just like, okay, I'll change this now. And then you know, do what you can for yourself.
And I think it, just back to your point in, you know, in health psychology, we know that, you know, if you're going to try and make these big changes, you're not going to change habits, you know. So really those, you know, small achievable goals each step of the way to improve whatever you can, or as we say, control the controllables. So, Mark, tell me a little bit about your HOPE program, and if if I were joining your HOPE program tomorrow, what's involved in the program, and how would we get started?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, the HOPE program, I created it to be able to allow couples to once and for all, one, get the support that they need. You know, so often they are dismissed, minimized, ignored, and they don't have that support to tell them, yes, no, you're not going crazy. This is true. These are the things that need to be supported. So first and foremost, I want them to have support and ongoing support. Two, I want them to have hope and belief that they can achieve the things that they desire to achieve with the right support that they need and that they should get. And I want them to also learn to be advocates for themselves. Like the more knowledgeable they are about their specific situation and what they need, the more knowledgeable they are that they're, you know, just because they're dismissed by one person doesn't mean that it's inaccurate or wrong, and they have confidence in themselves and they could speak up and communicate that and have knowledge that it's accurate. But most importantly, I want them to be able to get answers. You know, so often the answers that couples are given is IVF or donor egg. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with either one of those things. 50% of the couples we support go through IVF. So, and I think it's a really amazing tool that we have that we didn't have in the past. But IVF and donor egg are not answers for what is going on, right? So we do that as a sidestep to hopefully yield the results. But what if we did really know what was going on and we were able to support those things, those areas, that even if we did need IVF or donor egg or whatever path we needed, wouldn't we want to know what was really going on and how to support ourselves, not just for fertility, but just to get healthy overall? And my motto is that if we become healthier humans, if we become healthier people, then we have an easier time conceiving. And that's really the premise behind me creating the HOPE program. It's to be able to support couples to find real answers, to give them real information and real knowledge, to dive deeper into their specific situation so that they can get the support that they need, and to hopefully in the end yield the results that they're looking for, which is, you know, a healthy baby in their arms. And so we do that in a really methodical way. When someone joins the program, they get access to our member portal, which has all sorts of information, but it really guides them step one, step two, step three. Like they go through that process. Yeah. And first and foremost, we need information. So one of the first things we ask them to do is to gather all their lab work and medical history, but also to get updated ones. And we give them a list of labs that we want them to have. Like this is just the bare minimum of what everybody should have. Most often than not, most people don't have all of those things. And if they have, they're not up to date. So we do those things. Simultaneously, because getting labs can take a little bit of time. A lot of those have to be are predicated on where you are in your menstrual cycle. And so, you know, if you don't catch it at the right time, then we're waiting another 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it might be. And so in the meantime, we have them resetting their bodies with a very kind of mild detox. And then getting them to start to make changes with their diet and their lifestyle and their sleep and starting to eliminate toxins. So the program starts to ask them to do these things as we are gathering all that information. And then once we have all their labs and we have all the paperwork that they've completed, they get a private one-on-one call with my team. And that's where we're gathering all their history, all their information, and getting a better understanding for who they are, for what's going on, asking all the questions we have, going through all their lab work with them, and just really kind of telling them, gathering information and telling them what we see. Sometimes, once we have all that, we do need a little bit more information. So in terms of testing, so we might ask for some additional things for them to get. But once we have all the information we need, then we develop a customized fertility plan for them based on their findings and their unique situation. And that's going to be everything from diet to lifestyle to supplements, home therapy techniques. You know, if we feel like they need IVF or not, or donor egg or not, or whatever it might be, these are all things that we will discuss with them and review with them. And then they're in the program forever. It's a lifelong program. So whether they want one child or multiple children, they can come back in the future. And then they also have access to connect with us on a daily and or weekly basis. So we have a private group that if they have questions ongoing, and so like we have couples who are going through IVF and they've got questions about their protocol or what's going on, you know, I'm in the middle of my stimulation and should, you know, do these numbers look good? Should we trigger? Is this time to retrieve? Those sorts of things. So we can give, you know, pretty quick feedback on those areas. And then we have a weekly live call where they get to submit their questions and talk with me to review their situation, to review their questions and see if things need to be adjusted and modified. So, you know, it's not just about creating a plan and then saying, off you go. Yeah. I mean, that can happen to some, but it's not our ideal situation. And we do ask them to check back in, right? Like, we don't want you wouldn't just go on medication and then just run off and not check in with your physician. And so this is the same thing. Once we give you a plan and give you a process to go forward with, we want to see change. So today I just reviewed two lab results for couples who had been on the plan and now that we were checking in with them. And the results for these two specifically, I wish it was always this way. It's not always this way. But for these two specifically, they had amazing results. Like everything we wanted to see change really improved. So then the plan needs to be modified based on that. And then they can go forward again, right? And move forward. Yeah. And then they could, you know, continue to see change and results. And so it's a process. But, you know, the program itself is really designed to support couples to find the real reason, to give them a plan to facilitate the change that they need, and to then hopefully get those results.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. I think specifically the support part of it, because I think you can find the data easy enough. You can go and get the tests, but I think to have somebody literally walk beside you and hold your hand through, you know, the next few weeks, months, years, makes such a huge difference. I think, as you know, that emotional turmoil that is part of this journey for so many, without that, I think one point of contact or that group of people to connect with, you're just, you know, out in the wind and, you know, kind of hoping for the best, you know, when it's
right.
I just feel like the fertility kind of industry itself, it's so fragmented. So I think the program that you've created that really just, you know, covers everything for this couple and especially the support issue. I think it's one of the reasons why fertility coaching is so popular, because you can feel very isolated. And you know, although it's changing, there is still that stigma and taboo about talking about, you know, you're having trouble trying to, you know, have a baby. But do you ever find that you've, especially because you've been at this a while now, have you found that people are more motivated these days and they will follow the plan? Or do you sometimes come back like test result after test result and it's like, yeah, they're not really making the changes that they need to make? Like, have you ever had to have that conversation with somebody that there's a bit of work to do here, you know, for on both sides?
Yeah, you know, I do find that most people are committed to the process. You know, things do get in the way from time to time. And so we have to be mindful of that. Life does happen. I think the biggest thing that I see is not that someone doesn't follow through, although on occasion that is the case. It's more often that they've followed through, but then they've fallen off. And so we need to help support them to pick them back up and get them motivated to keep going and continue on doing what they were doing because it was working. And so that's more often what we find. Look, one of the beautiful things about the program is that we have all these members in the program who are active. So it's not just me supporting them and giving them encouragement. Yeah. They feel it from all the different members. They post a question. They don't just get answers from me. They get answers from everybody. I always love to see when all the other members are answering the questions, supporting them, because, you know, they don't have to answer those questions, but they do because they want everyone to be successful. They want everyone to get the support that they need. And they know how important that support is because all of them have not had it before. So they know how important it is to give it back. And so that's really one of the more beautiful things that I see in the program is the support that they get from all the members in it.
That's lovely because it does. I think when, you know, the whole snake oil vibe around fertility and all of the, you know, claims that are out there, you know, and take this pill and you'll have six babies next year. And it is lovely to see, I think, and it speaks a lot to the authenticity of the program and your dedication to it when you have so many peer supporters saying, yeah, this works, you got to follow the program, do the work. And I think it's there's so much more credibility when you're speaking to other women who have, you know, they've been down this path, they have, you know, had a hard time, and, you know, it's worth the commitment. I think it's so much more important to hear that from other women to say, you know, because, you know, word of mouth, you know, for women, that's the deal. Or deal stealer or a deal breaker when it comes to referrals, especially when it comes to health and fertility. So if a couple were coming to you tomorrow and they're doing all the right things, they've you know, reducing their toxins as much as they can, they're eating really well, balanced diet, they're exercising, they've given up the booze and the cigarettes and all the fun stuff. What are you looking for? Like what would you tell them to do? Like, it's, and should they wait another 6 months? Because this is like what I see time and time again is that, and it's in part of women's health as well, that women are told to just, you know, go away for another while and come back to us in another 6 months or keep trying. And it's so frustrating when you've been to a care provider that you have a relationship with that just will not listen to you when you know something's not right. And your ovulation is all over the place, or you just feel that there's something's not right. Do I have to keep waiting, or can we just, you know, what's your kind of plan? I'm doing all the right things. Where do we start? What's the first thing you're doing with your panels?
Yeah, I think it's really circumstantial. You know, if someone clearly has something going on, like you could see their cycles are irregular, or there's some sort of real issue. Even if they've done all these other labs and so forth, and they've started to clean up all these areas, there's clearly something that's wrong, then the approach in that individual with that individual or couple is going to be really different than for somebody who, no, everything looks fine. I ovulate regularly. I menstruate regularly. All my labs look fine. I eat well. I take care of, like, all those things. All the boxes are checked and we have nothing wrong. That's a very different approach than someone who clearly has something off. Someone who has something off, I'm not going to say, oh, just keep trying. That's not appropriate in that situation. We need to do something about that thing, whatever it might be, that issue. And whether that is going, you know, to, you know, if it's endometriosis and we need surgery, or if it's something else and we need to do IVF, whatever it might be, we need to take action. Maybe it is, okay, well, maybe I might see like, okay, so there's an issue there and I don't feel like it's been handled appropriately up until this point. So then I might say, well, let's try this for a little bit. Are you okay if we try to make some progress in this area before we move forward with X, Y, or Z? So it really just depends on each circumstance and individual and the situation in front of us. I should say, age plays a really big role. So as much as you might, you know, those who are listening might hear me often say, because I do, age doesn't matter, because to me it doesn't. It matters in one area. It matters when we have to make decisions and time is impacting that. That's where age matters, right? Age doesn't matter if you're 31, and I have several women right now who are 31 that I'm supporting. That is a whole different circumstance with age and time than someone who's 41.
Yeah.
And so we have to make different choices in at each one of those stages. They might present exactly the same, but the 41-year-old has to approach things differently than the 31-year-old. Okay.
Yeah.
Just based on time. And so that might be a person who says, well, I'm only willing, or you should only give yourself 3 months of trying naturally at 41 because you've already been trying before before we go forward with an IUI or IVF. So that's really where things start to play. And then age matters. If someone says to me, well, I'd really like 2 or 3 children, well, then, you know, we have to think about all of those things. So I do think that those are all variables, which is what makes each situation so different and so unique, because you're layering these health issues with age and time and family planning and so forth that is so unique to each individual. And all of these things have to be taken into account. And just because one person did this doesn't mean that that's the solution for everybody if they have different, if their situation is a little bit different. So, you know, all of that bodes differently for everybody, which is why I think it's so important for us to have a conversation. Even this morning, I had my coaching call this morning with my members, and someone who just recently joined, but I don't have a full history. You know, she's like, okay, so here are my hormones. What should I do? I'm like, I need some more context for this. I need more information to be able to guide you. And I don't like to be the person who makes the decision. It's not my decision to be made, right? It's theirs as couples and individuals. I just want to give you the information and the resources. I might tell you, well, if I were in your shoes, I would do this. It doesn't mean that you would do the same. And so it's very much as a couple, what would you do, right? One person would consider donor egg. Another person would never consider donor egg. They might have the same situation. You know, if someone comes to me and says, I only want to get pregnant naturally, I don't want to consider IVF, I don't want to consider donor, then we have all the time in the world. Then it doesn't matter. Like, then it's a matter of like, well, we just got to keep trying. And I'm not saying that we have all the time in the world that we're going to then delay things. Not at all. It just changes the approach. So I say this because I think the answer just varies from person to person based on the circumstances. And their situation. What I don't want someone to do is to unnecessarily wait. I want people to get results as quickly as possible within reason, but I also want them to not unnecessarily move forward with something before they've given something else a chance and before they've made progress with themselves. So a really great example of this is I have a woman who came to me recently. I want to say I've been working with her for, 4 months. And so she came to me and she had hypothalamic amenorrhea, irregular cycles. And when she would exercise too much and when she would not take care of her, she was under a lot of stress, her cycles would disappear. And it was very difficult for her to get them back. And when she would get them back, she'd maybe get like one cycle and then again, it would disappear. So we've been recently supporting her. And I had to tell her, okay, you are not allowed to work out other than walking. Like you can go for walks for as long as you'd like. I'll even let you go for a hike. You can't do anything more than that. And this is for someone who would exercise much, much more than that. And then I made sure that she was getting enough sleep, that she was eating well, and all the basics were in their place.
And then is she now power walking 50 miles a day?
No. She's doing okay. And I, you know, put together a plan with supplements and everything. And so she's doing great. She's now just, she's had, I think three cycles in a row. Maybe we've been working together for 5 months. She's had three cycles in a row, but they've progressively gotten shorter, closer together, which is what we're trying to do. Okay. But I think 6 weeks ago, we had a conversation because we've been working hard to get her to where she needs to be. And so 6 weeks ago, we had a conversation and I said, we've been doing all of this stuff for you. How about your husband? Well, he's fine. He's healthy. And I was like, well, how do we know? Wouldn't you rather know now?
Mm-hmm.
Because you're putting in all this time for yourself versus finding out in 6 months or a year. And then you're going to feel like, oh, well, we should have done this before. Because now we have to wait more time for him to be tested, you know, to get tested and to get treatment. Well, we tested him. He was all for it. Unfortunately, his numbers do not look good at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't know that, they would have just kept going and not thought there was any, because they thought all the whole issue was with her. Well, now we have a chance to be proactive with him simultaneously with her. So hopefully the goal is that they're both ready at the same time or roughly around the same time. They've just saved themselves time, right?
Yeah.
So these are all things that we have to have conversations. We have to understand the bigger picture. And that's where, you know, the experience and the knowledge and the understanding really comes in to guide some of these couples to move forward. And that's why timing is so important and the understanding of how it all fits together is so important.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving parts as such.
Lots. Yeah.
So, Mark, just on what's coming down the pipeline, trends in fertility. I'm seeing home IUI kits, and so what are your thoughts? What are you seeing, and what's your professional opinion of home IUI? And I think it's a great idea, but along with home pap smears, anything else? That's,
the more we can be in control of ourselves and our health, I'm all for. So I used to refer to them as home IUIs, and I used to get like berated on my videos that they're not IUIs because they can't go intrauterine, which they're correct. But, you know, for keeping it simple and easy, I would refer to it as IUI. So funny enough, I talked about it in my last video, I referred to it as ICI, so intracervical insemination. And then I got all these questions. What is ICI?
anything icy and cervix does not sound very appealing.
No. So they're similar. They've been around for a while. What we're seeing now is much better devices, much better technology that can really do the job. And I'm all for them, by the way. I think they're great. And they serve a great purpose, especially for a lot of male factor. I love it. So those are new and old, depending on, you know, what we're using. The things that we're seeing more in terms of trend really comes along testing and monitoring at home with all these different apps and kits and so forth, which, again, are useful. And important and valuable in certain circumstances. The other trends is what can we do to help improve fertility rates and outcomes? And I think that is something that we're seeing, not so much of what individuals can do at home, but what can we do with technology? And so we are starting to see PRP a lot more, ovarian PRP, or what we call now ovarian rejuvenation, which does have different types of rejuvenation to help restore the ovaries or improve the ovarian function and egg quality. I will say, I don't believe it's for everybody, but I do believe it serves a purpose and can be very helpful. Something that we're seeing new, but also along these same lines, but not so much in the United States, is stem cells. In the ovaries, it's not allowed in the United States, but you can do it abroad. Things that I am looking at and incorporating, and these things are kind of somewhat new, is light therapy, laser therapy, hyperbaric chamber. These are all things that I am starting to recommend and have conversations about with those individuals who I think really need it. You know, if they're older and we're trying to improve egg quality and ovarian function, these are things that they theoretically could do at home. Not hyperbaric chamber so much, but the others.
The red light therapy.
The red light therapy and the laser therapy, if you can get a good one. But they all, the issue with all of them is just it's cost. You know, you have to be willing to invest in it to be able to use it to even see if it works for you. So,
yeah.
But those are the things.
Great. Mark, thank you so much for joining me this evening. It was great to pick your brain a little bit about the HOPE program. And tell us where people can find you and sign up for your programs.
Yeah, so always at my website, marksklar.com. But the place where you will find the better information, I should say, is my YouTube channel, which is Fertility TV. And you can always find me on the social media platforms as the Fertility Expert, where I'm sharing all of that information as well.
Great. And I'll include all of your details in the show notes. So thank you again for joining me, Mark.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning into today's episode. Remember, empowerment begins with knowledge. If you enjoyed our time together and want more content like this, don't forget to like, subscribe, and share with your friends. So stay inspired. Stay informed, and until next time, take care of yourself.